I'm Catherine Millington-Sanders, GP and RCGP in Marie Curie, National End-of-Life Care Clinical Champion. And this is a podcast on developing compassionate culture and leadership to support quality improvement in end-of-life care. So that compassion isn't just a word, but an experience. I'm here with one expert pilot side lead from the Daffodil Standards. Do you want to introduce yourself and why this is important to you?
Thank you, Catherine. I'm Liz Phillips. I'm a GP partner at an inner city area of Birmingham. And this is really important to me because I believe that in order to achieve quality improvement in end-of-life care, in order for that to be successful, we have to get to the root of things. We have to identify a shared purpose. So coming back to the NHS change model, which is really important when we're planning any quality improvement within our practices, right at the centre of that model is our shared purpose. And if we are able to identify a shared purpose, that is something that helps us to keep going, even when things get difficult with our quality improvement.
So you're right, it is easy to focus on metrics such as increasing identification of patients and carers or personalised care plans. But this is about really getting underneath the culture of your practice, isn't it? It's about making it really meaningful and it just not being another set of targets, but really understanding and deliberating on your culture and your leadership and how you support real change within practice.
Absolutely. One of my concerns was that I didn't just want another set of targets to achieve, another set of boxes to tick. I wanted something that was going to last, something that was going to be meaningful. And if you look at Standard 8 of the Daffodil Standards, it's looking at developing a compassionate culture within your practice to help serve a compassionate community. So that was what I was wanting to think about. If we're honest, our NHS workplaces are not always the compassionate places that we would want them to be. Now, we think that we're working in a compassionate place, but if we're absolutely honest, if we think carefully about it, there are many things that are not compassionate about the way we look after ourselves or look after the team members that we're working with. And I wanted to think specifically and deliberately about those things, start to make changes in those areas so that then we could be successful in our ongoing quality improvement work.
And what I really liked is the way that you got underneath some of your staff's real experience rather than just you assuming that you knew how they felt or just because you'd had little chats with them or you saw them on reception or you might have seen them in the corridor. It was really just embracing the whole, let's get underneath your positive and negative experiences, not seeing that as a personal challenge, but actually just saying, these are some of the facts, these are how people feel, and actually, what are we going to do with that? So I wonder, I just like the way that you started that level of curiosity and wondered, can you tell us a bit more about that?
So I think it's really important to develop a culture of psychological safety so that, first of all, people are able to speak freely and speak honestly, because it's those honest conversations that are going to start to identify things that you can make changes to culture. And this is not an easy fix. It's not a quick win. It's hard work and you have to be deliberate about it. So we did a number of things in the practice. And one of those was to create a team meeting. In a larger practice, you might want several focus groups, but it's important that those groups are mixed teams. So they're not just all doctors or all admin staff. And actually, it's developed in an environment where people are able to speak freely. So the people don't have to worry about what they say, but at the same time, it's not just an opportunity for a great moan or a lot of problems to be brought up. But actually, if everyone's coming together under the idea we want to change a culture, we want something positive to come out of this, we value you, we acknowledge that things are difficult, we acknowledge that we're working under pressure. Those kind of acknowledgements coming from a leadership team can be really powerful to the rest of the team members. And actually, some of the reception staff, this was the first time that they'd ever had an opportunity to have an environment like this and to speak freely. And it was very, very powerful for them to have that opportunity to actually speak freely about how they felt that compassion could be improved within the practice.
And you had three questions, didn't you, that you...
Yes. So we talked to them about what makes you feel valued and supported at work. So, you know, what are the things that are important to you? How can we support team members that are suffering from a crisis or a loss or a bereavement? And what practical things, what practical ideas did people have for how we can improve the compassionate culture? And that was a really interesting question, actually, because people have some very creative ideas. And if you say anything goes, throw anything out there. And one of the ideas that came out was to create a daffodil box. So this was basically a box that was present behind reception into which people could post anonymous positive comments about other team members, so that at the monthly clinical team meeting, these comments would then be read out, and there would be positive encouragement for that particular member who had received that. And it was so well received. And the comments, things like, thank you so much for making me a cup of tea on that day when I was really struggling in my surgery, or thank you so much for doing my prescriptions when I was running behind. Those kind of comments, those things that perhaps we don't always think to say thank you for, but then can be publicly acknowledged, that was really good for our team.
And I know that you've really looked at compassionate leadership, and the new GMC document that breaks down compassionate leadership into four headings. I know you've paid real attention to that, combining it with getting under staff feeling and the culture, but also making sure that there's a leadership approach. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I think the GMC document, Caring for Doctors, Caring for Patients, is very pertinent to this. And it talks specifically about compassionate leadership under four headings. So attending, understanding, empathising and helping. And as a leadership team in the practice, we've spent some time looking at these four headings specifically. But I'd just like to mention some of the things that I think have been really interesting coming out of this. One of those things is actually noticing suffering at work, and that leaders inquire about suffering when they notice it. And this might sound obvious, but I don't think it happens that often in practice. And actually, it's not going to happen unless we're deliberate about it, because work is busy. If we're not deliberate, we're not going to notice it. So actually thinking, how often are we doing this? In order to notice suffering, we have to be interacting with the people that we're working with. And it's those daily positive interactions with people that will help us to do that. Another thing that came out of this document is recognising that often mistakes, errors or missed deadlines or problems, they are often masking an underlying suffering. And if we don't look beneath the problems to what else might be going on, these are going to be recurrent things within our practice. But actually looking deeper, noticing the suffering, inquiring about it, and then potentially there'll be opportunities to make a difference and to change things for that particular person. And the thing that's been really pertinent in our practice is developing a flexibility around someone who's suffering, and offering a buffer and thinking how things could be done differently and looking at how different team members can be used differently. And that's been really useful and helpful for us.
I also like the way that you generated some of the ideas and let other people, you know, the real style of quality improvement, let other people come up and generate what could be some of the change ideas, like the daffodil standards box, and like the room that you allowed people to be able to have a bit of safe space, and other things that actually came from within the practice. So it wasn't actually saying this is what you need to do. It's just being able to allow them some space to talk about it.
Yeah. One of the ways that we did that was by creating a staff survey. And then allowing space in that survey for staff to come up with their own ideas, and then analysing the results of that survey into themes, feeding back in a team meeting, and actually really brought the practice together, the leadership team and the rest of the team members, so that the ideas were generated organically.
And I know that you've done with us for the RCGP this fantastic module that you can get online on the DAFTIL Standards website. Are there any other components that you found have been really helpful?
Well, I think fundamentally it's been about trying to change that culture that we have, and then seeing how that then acts as a catalyst to quality improvement in the other areas of end-of-life care. So actually, as a practice now, we're looking at improving our kind of early identification of patients reaching the end-of-life care. And it's seeing that because we know the purpose behind it, because we are modelling compassionate leadership within the practice, there is a positive effect on the team coming together to develop the quality improvement in these other areas.
And I know that one of your beliefs is fundamentally that if we don't put in place and get underneath that culture and leadership, it can be much more difficult to focus on some of the easier metrics, well,
yes,
that become much easier once you've got that more robust structure and culture in place.
Absolutely. In terms of engaging staff members, engaging them in why should we be doing this? And when we're busy, we're under pressure, why should we be trying to make a quality improvement, develop things further? I fundamentally believe that in our practice, now that we have started at the roots, we've developing the culture, that actually those things are now easier for us to do.
And you've given a firm foundation before you might do an end-of-life care audit, and you might go on to do
Absolutely. All
the rest of your SMART aims. You've got that real sort of grassroots up.
Absolutely. And that, I think, provides the longevity that is needed. This is not going to run out in a few years' time. This is something that is with us for the future.
Thank you, Liz. We have really enjoyed talking with you today, and fantastic having this podcast on developing compassionate culture and leadership to support quality improvement in end-of-life care.
Thank you.
There is a selection of RCGP, Marie Curie and other educational resources on the RCGP Daffodil Standards website. That's rcgp.org.uk/daffodilstandards.